Welcome to the Hatch podcast for Hive.
This is Lauren Wright interviewing a multi-award winning young adult fiction writer, Paula Rosethorne, for Hive Young Writers Network. Thank you so much for doing this interview, Paula.
Absolute pleasure, Lauren.
If you just want to say maybe just a little bit about what you've done in your writing journey, maybe how you got started, how you started to bring everything together for novels and things like that.
Right, yeah, so I'll give a little potted history. So I didn't know I wanted to be a writer when I was growing up and in my early adult life, and it was really only in my 30s when I went on maternity leave from a job which is completely unrelated to anything to do with English language, literature or writing. I was on maternity leave and just one morning, out of the blue, just sat down when one of my babies was asleep and started to write a story that I hadn't planned to do, but just felt kind of real urge to write. And I wrote this story, and it was a bit of a light bulb moment in my life. And I thought, wow, I enjoyed the process. I really gave me a real buzz, and I thought I'd really like to do more of this, even though it's not something I'd ever thought of doing. So I started to pursue it and just write more, write when if I could, and started sending stuff off and just trying to get better at what I was doing and trying to get my stories out onto paper. And then I had another baby, and then I was watching TV one day because, you know, absolutely knackered with the kids. And at the end of a drama, there was a announcement about a national competition the BBC were running, and that was a great impetus for me and a great kick up the backside that I needed, because, you know, I was really tired and thinking, well, I'm not getting very far with this. But it had a deadline and a theme, and I thought, well, what the heck, I might as well give it a go. So I went upstairs immediately and started to write a story, a comic story, around the theme, which was modern versions of Chaucer's tales. Had to read some of the Chaucer's tales first to get my head around it, and then started to come up with ideas. And very, very luckily, I was one of the winners of that, and got to go to London with the BBC and see the wonderful actor Bill Nighy. He read my comic story for Radio 4, and that was like a massive boost to my writing confidence. And so I used that and found opportunities, found that I'm based in Nottingham, found that they had a literature development officer at the county council, which was brilliant. So I went to tell him that I'd, you know, won this competition, I was interested in writing, and he was looking at avenues for me. And I started getting my short stories published, which was brilliant, in anthologies of contemporary literature. Then I'm really one for like seeking out opportunities, because they're not going to come and, you know, find you. Then I found on the internet this amazing organization called the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and they were running their British Isles base, because they've got chapters all over the world. They were running an Undiscovered Voices competition for people who weren't agented and hadn't been published yet. It's all to do with children and or young adult literature. And so I've been, you know, wanted to write a novel. I wanted it to be for teenagers. So I'd written the first draft. That was a real impetus, you know, a real something to aim for. And I entered the first three chapters. The first draft was written. That's one of the rules. It has to be written. Entered the first three chapters and a synopsis to this nationwide competition, and very, very luckily was one of the winners. And that really did open doors for me. You know, you had a launch party of an anthology of all the winners in London with a room full of agents, which is like a dream come true. I had to pinch myself. And from there, one of the agents who'd been a judge on the panel actually had already approached me and wanted to represent me. And that's how I got my my agent, and that led to a publishing deal with Osborne. So I was very, very lucky. Yeah, and it all kind of went from there.
Wow, that's incredible.
I was incredibly lucky, Lauren. So you just got to, I think once you start, you've just got to look for opportunities. You can't just stay in your room writing in the dark and hoping someone's going to knock on your door saying, have you written anything good? You've got to like get out there and see if anyone's interested in your work.
Yeah, definitely. Just following on from that, where did you actually find out about the competitions and like your writing opportunities?
Internet, mainly. Internet, putting things like that in, children's and teen writing competitions or publishing opportunities. And as I said, when I won the BBC competition, I then went and found out that my city had a literature development officer, which I don't know whether all cities do, but that's something that you should look into. All, you know, new writers should look for opportunities within their city as well. And he was really helpful, hooking me up with different things. And small presses were really great. So they're not these big publishing houses. They're people who are absolutely passionate about literature. And some of them have their own kind of niche. It may be more political literature, but still fiction, all different types. And I found a great route who are Yorkshire-based in Pontefract, and they're still going because this is a long time ago. Are a small press, very dynamic, Ian Daly and his partner. And they were the ones, I submitted my short stories, which were for adults, my short stories. I submitted them to Root and they started getting published there. And that, so it's really looking around for opportunities and finding out from other writers as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Okay, so you just mentioned about the publisher. Can you tell us a little bit more about the whole experience of working alongside publishers? And you've mentioned about finding the publisher, but how did it actually feel working with the publisher?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's not, you know, not something I've ever done before. So once I was very lucky to get my agent, and she, you know, this is the thing about your book. Your first draft, obviously, is not the finished product. So you have to go away and really work and hone it and get it as great as you think it can be. But of course, other people will grab hold of it and say it's not good enough. And that's what happens with publishers. So they bought Truth About Celia Frost, which is my first book, and gave me a 2-book deal, which is like, I was so pleased about. And then, of course, once the editor at the publishing house gets hold of your book, they want to work on it with you. And so I love that process, actually. You have to choose your battles. You can't be too precious. It is your baby, you know. But you have to listen to their advice, their notes, take it on board, see what works for you. And I like that collaborative experience, because I know a lot of writers do love to be involved in writing groups, and for many writers they find this really works for them. And so that's something I would, you know, advise, if writing groups help. For me, I was always very, very solitary, kind of just getting on with it, so it was really quite exciting to have an editor and bounce around different avenues with them. And, you know, sometimes it can be a hard process because you think, oh, I don't agree with that. And you have to fight your corner. And other times you think, oh, that's really great if we go down this route. So that the creative process continues, of course, even after the publisher buys the book. And then, of course, Osborne and Scholastic also have published my books. They're luckily, they've got, you know, the big publishing houses, so they have creative teams to do the book covers, which is also really exciting. And then you're dealing with marketing people and the marketing campaign. So it's just really, I love the whole process. Sometimes it was, you know, as I say, as a writer, you'll find this. You have to compromise or fight your corner. But it was a really exciting process, and I felt really kind of privileged to you know, have such good publishers.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Wow. So, you don't have any academic experience with writing, like you don't have a degree in writing. So
no, I've got politics. My degree's politics, and I did an MA in social work.
So how has that affected you writing professionally now, like your successes and your experiences and stuff? Would you have done anything differently, maybe, if you could have?
I think it just happened at the right time, probably, in my life. I think maybe if I tried writing before, it wouldn't have... I wouldn't have had the experience, you know, to do it. Life experience, maybe, you know. So, I mean, the downside to it was I had no connections at all in the writing industry. I didn't know any other writers when I started, you know, because my work was completely unrelated and I didn't do writing as a hobby or interest. It was really out of the blue. So I had absolutely no network or connections, but like I said, you know, you've got to go out and make them, and it's really good to hook up with other, you know, writing organizations and things like that, like Scooby, who are the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. It's packed full of great people, so it was great to meet them. But I think with maybe it was a bit of fate that it just happened at a time where I suddenly felt very creative. So, you know, because beforehand, well, I was still busy because I had, you know, three little ones under five at one stage, which was a challenge. But maybe I just had that creative burst at that time in my life and was able to run with it. So, so there are downsides, but you can make connections yourself if you've got the, you know, willpower to do it, I think.
Yeah.
But obviously, if I'd done a writing course, you can make great connections. You can bounce off other writers in the classes. So that obviously there's really good advantages to doing writing courses. But for me, it seems to have, it worked out okay at the right time in my life, I think.
It goes to show that you don't necessarily need to have academic experience to succeed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, amazing writers will have done writing courses and come out of there, and I think just as many, not Lauren, not that I'm calling myself an amazing writer, I don't mean me in this. What I'm saying is, just as many have just come, you know, from other jobs and just started writing like me out the blue, and it's worked out for them. Yeah, so there's different avenues, aren't there?
Yeah.
And it does take some luck as well as hard work, because writing's hard work, isn't it? You know, but anything worth doing is hard. You know, it's worth the graft.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay, so moving on. So in general, your writing, how do you come up and develop the ideas for your books, and like what's your writing process, if you want to just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my short stories were for adults, and my novels so far have been for young adults. I think it's always different, but I think the idea and the concept and the story, it probably comes first. If I really think about it, it probably comes first. I mean, with any decent story and novel, it has to be that perfect marriage, doesn't it, between character and story. One without the other, you know, doesn't work. You need strong, engaging, memorable characters, and you need a story that grips. I know in literary fiction, they do get away without a gripping story a lot of the time, and it's all about ideas, themes, you know, character. But I personally enjoy that combination of both. But ideas are really important to me. So maybe when my first short story, which was really quite a dark, dark, intense adult tale, I was thinking about, there used to be underground, years ago, the paved over now, there used to be underground toilets in Market Square in Nottingham. So it's a really significant spot in the city. And they were really dingy, but they were maintained. And I started to think, my God, what would happen if the woman in attendance in the toilets actually lived there? And why did she live there? And that sparked that story off, which is, as I say, it's pretty dark. So it was the idea, and it's like, I mean, I do a lot of schoolwork, which I absolutely love, and I always say to the students, if you're ever stuck, just ask yourself, what if? What if? And finish a sentence, and you will have the spark of a story idea. So what if the woman who attends the toilets under Market Square actually lived there? And nobody knew. Yeah? So most of my stories come from that. They come from things I see in the media, kind of maybe often niche stories. I think, wow. And I don't take the whole story. I take something about that story that sparks an idea. So let's think. The blood tracks came from a court case that I got a bit obsessed with. And there was a tiny aspect of that court case where a witness got on the stand, and I knew she was lying under oath. But what she said, it was too hard to discredit her. They couldn't prove she was lying. And I thought, ooh, what if? Blah, blah, blah. And that came from blood tracks. And with Shell, it was something my daughter said. She said, what if the super rich could find a way to live forever? And I started thinking, ooh, what would you do there? And so it's all about being really interested in the idea and then researching, for me, this is researching, expanding it, looking down different avenues. And then, of course, with that comes along, which character is telling this story? What's happening to them? What are they like? What obstacles are they overcoming? What are their goals? So it's that whole creative process, isn't it? And it can happen in different orders, and it doesn't matter. I just start writing things randomly down, paper and pen at first. But research is really important, because from research, other ideas can kind of flourish. So, and sometimes with my YA novels, three of them are ultimately about near future technology. So things right now, which may seem like sci-fi, which in 10 years' time may be reality. So I like the concept of that. I'm working with that kind of material. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned Shell there.
Yeah.
One of your novels. What was the inspiration behind it? You kind of mentioned it just a little bit there. And where did the actual idea for the transplant come from?
Yeah, so that was, my daughter. So, like, as a writer, we're always listening out, aren't we? We're always listening out for ideas. And we're quite attuned to when people say something and we think, ooh, other people may not, you know, it may skirt over them. But as writers, because we're kind of looking for stories, we might think, gosh, that's interesting what that woman's just said. But it was my daughter, as I said, she was coming up, you know, the way young people do, because they're brilliant, coming up with strange things. And, you know, what if, you know, the rich could extend their life, and how would they do that, and could they live forever? And so I thought, wow, that's a really interesting concept. You know, morally, ethically, philosophically, it's a really interesting concept about wanting to live forever. And then, so from that, I started researching, and there's cryonics with, you know, the freezing process. And I thought, well, that's been done before and whatever. So I started looking, and then I thought of Frankenstein. And then I thought of body transplants. And then I thought, well, that's sci-fi. And then I started my research and discovered this really weird neuroscientist, Sergio Cannavaro, Italian guy, who's been trying for decades to do body transplants, still unsuccessfully, but, and he's a pariah in the scientific community, quite rightly, but he has been in China, where the ethics and rules are a lot slacker. And he's been trying to do this, and it was absolutely fascinating, this kind of, you know, character who wants to transplant brains. And actually, he wants to chop people's heads off and put them on other bodies. So from that, I thought about this girl, Lucy, and what would happen to her if she was dying. And I also thought about her parents. So there's all kinds of different aspects to this kind of, this ethical, moral dilemma. Her parents, who were super rich, know she's going to die of cancer. And if this is the only way to try this experimental body transplant to save their daughter, would they do it? But the novel is all from Lucy's perspective, because I wanted the reader to feel how she feels with her brain and eyes trapped inside the body of another person. And that's hopefully what I was hoping to convey, that feeling in Shell. And, you know, luckily with lots of readers, it has resonated and made them think, have lots of questions about, you know, what would they do, and body image, and how it affects you, and how much of you is part of your body, your identity. So, yeah, it has been really interesting too. That's one of the great things about being a writer, particularly for teenagers, is interacting with readers and getting their thoughts on things.
Yeah, it definitely brings up a lot of moral questions, like how would you respond in that scenario, especially as it's written in that perspective.
Well, that's kind of what I try to do with my stories, because as I'm writing them, I'm asking myself, well, what would I do? What would I do? And I think I really enjoy stories which are, you know, A, entertaining, but B, also are quite thought-provoking. And you can try and, even if it's something completely alien, like a body transplant, you can try and put yourself in that character's shoes and think, well, how would I respond? You know, and are the parents just beyond the pale bad? Or, you know, have they done it for the right motives, but they've done the right wrong thing? Things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so including all of your books that you've written up until now, which one would you say you're the most proud of, and why?
That's like asking me to choose between my children. That's a cruel question.
It's a very hard question.
They've all got, there's all bits of them that I, you know, really like. I don't like to use the word proud, but I do really like Shell. And I like the response to Shell in that it has provoked a lot of discussion, which is very, you know, satisfying. But also, you know, the truth about Celia Frost was my first ever book, kind of with no involvement of anyone, you know, just writing it to my own deadline to just get it out there. It was a complete leap of faith to spend time writing, you know, your first novel with no contacts and whatever. And, you know, I will always, always have massive affection for The Truth About Celia Frost. And it also really, you can love your own characters, can't you? You spend so much time with them, but you can have real affection for these. They become like something else apart from you, you know. And I do have real, real affection for the characters in The Truth About Celia Frost, particularly Celia and Sol, who's her best mate, and Celia's mother, Janice, who, you know, is this really, really imperfect woman, but she's really an incredible woman. She's very ordinary, but she's done an incredible thing. And so, I think I have the most affection for my characters in The Truth About Celia Frost.
Brilliant. Okay, so think about the people that will be listening or reading this. What is the best advice that you can give to new writers or emerging writers about developing their work?
Yeah, well, you'll all find your own way of the best way to develop your work. But first of all, rule number one is you've got to write. So you can't just sit around thinking, I really would like to be a writer. You know, you're not going to be a writer unless you write. And it doesn't matter what you write. Just get things down. Just get things started. If you need inspiration, if you need, you know, a buddy to spur you on, then think about who you can turn to. Think about joining a writer's group. Think about what's in your city, in your town, what's going on. You know, people that you get on with, that you trust their opinion. I mean, the thing about writing is if you show it to your nan, she's going to say it's great, yeah, because she's your nan or your mum. So you've got to find someone who's more independent, who you trust and value their opinion. Not that you don't value your mum's opinion, but, you know, who's going to give you a more honest answer and say, this bit's really great, but that bit is really disjointed, or that character is too cliched. And just take on board advice that you respect. Get out there, look for opportunities. I am a big fan of entering, you know, awards competitions, because, you know, you might think, like the BBC competition. I thought, well, you know, how many people in the UK are going to be entering that? I don't stand a chance. And that was a logical thing to think. But I did the illogical thing, which was to enter it, and I was one of the winners. So the thing is, you never, ever know. And even if you don't win, the whole process of writing that piece for that competition is not wasted. You've got a piece of work, you're learning your craft. And if you think it will help you and to do a course, then by all means do a course. But the main thing is to keep writing and to listen to feedback and enjoy it. I think if you're not enjoying the story you're writing, and it can be a slog, it's not all fun and games. And I mean, it can be really a really hard slog, and sometimes you don't want to do it, but just keep finding the bits you enjoy and keep thinking, right, I'm going to get there. That's it, I think.
Yeah. Okay, last question. What are you working on at the moment, if you're writing anything? And is there anything in the pipeline that maybe the readers of this need to know about?
Well, I am working on a novel for adults at the moment, and I've got a lovely editor on that. I'm excited about that. I've got to say, it's going slowly. Talk about motivation and keeping going. It is going slowly, but I'm chipping away at it. Now, with most writers, unless you're J.K. Rowling or David Walliams or whatever, most writers do have to do other jobs because they can't, you know, just have enough income on their writing alone. So obviously, there's a lot of freelance work involved, and I've been very, very lucky that all my freelance work is in some way related to writing, which is great. So I've got to do that as well as my novel, but it's just like eking out time to do it, getting on with it, and, you know, chipping away at it. And I think that's, hopefully, that will be, you know, the first. I'm still working on the first draft, so it's going to be a long process. But I'm quite excited about it. And, you know, you've got to be excited about your work, I think. It really helps you to keep motivated.
Yeah, that definitely sounds very exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Okay, yeah, Lauren. Yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for doing this interview. And you can also find more about Paula and her books at paularosethorne@wordpress.com, and I'm sure there'll be a link somewhere on the website if anybody wants to find out more.
Yes, and they can contact me if they want. There's a contact form on that website. If they've got any questions or want to, you know, ask me anything, they're welcome to.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Lauren, and very, very good luck with your writing. And, you know, I look forward to seeing your work on the bookshelves at some point. That'll be fantastic.